In Chicago, two comedian skeptics named Andy and Art were mysteriously abducted by the illusionary mastermind and conspiracy theorist known only as Mr. Bunker. The following serves as a record of Bunker's attempt to convince non-believers of the truth about conspiracies and paranormal activity. Andy and Art give an uninterrupted presentation and verdict on the plausibility of these offbeat topics, delivering what they call the whole enchilada. Will Mr. Bunker convince these two skeptics any of this is real? Will it convince you?
Welcome to Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast. As always, I'm your co-host, Art Stone, and with me, as always, is your co-host, Andy Hart.
Artie farty, what's up? It's me, Andy the Pandy. I only do two things, eat bamboo and not fuck. What's up, brother?
Andy, you really are a real-life zoo panda.
Yeah, zoo panda.
You are, you're encased in your bubble here in the bunker.
Yeah, yeah.
You probably feel a little bit like a panda.
On the open face toilet, I got alternating black and white striped clothing on, pants and shirt. They match.
Peon Musk makes you dress up like a little referee because, you know, me and him get heated sometimes in some of our competitions.
I have to, quote unquote, blow my whistle. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we know what you mean. Blow your load.
Yeah. And that's what breaks things up.
Speaking of blowing your load, I mean, Andy, today's topic, we're blowing our load all over this one. This is a big episode. I don't even know how long this episode's going to be, but I know it's going to be big and it's going to have a load blown. And I think a couple people listening are going to blow their loads when we hear what topic we're doing.
When we reveal it. Should I reveal it?
Go ahead and reveal it.
Okay, Bunk Bunkers, gird your loins because today we are discussing the missing 411 series of books and related phenomena,
movies,
documentaries,
podcasts, articles, interviews, radio appearances,
a lot of stuff.
Hotly requested topic. This topic requested so many different times. I mean, so many people are writing in.
Yeah.
Two different times.
Two times.
People, but we can tell.
Requested. I mean, you can tell. A lot of people didn't write in, but people wanted to.
Blake Shelton, Gwen Stefani, the guy from Maroon 5.
Young Sheldon, the actor that plays Young Sheldon.
Yeah, him. They're all, I mean, they haven't written in, but you can kind of tell when you watch them on TV.
Very interested.
You can tell.
Yeah. It's apparent.
No, highly requested. First requested almost a year ago this time.
Yep.
1 year ago.
Yep.
By Zoe.
Zoe,
if you're still out there, you're still listening, hey.
Thank you for sticking with us. We finally did right by you.
We're not liars.
No.
It just takes us a long time.
We're inattentive and...
We're slow.
Slow. We're smelly. We're bad kissers, but we're not liars.
That's true. And someone else has requested this topic multiple times, actually, OG Bunk Funker and Patreon supporter Cody Laveau.
Cody! Hi again.
Master painter.
Yeah, master mini painter.
Paints a great mini.
Cody, we hope you won't find this episode heresy.
good, very good, Andy.
okay. Trying to fit in.
There you go. Two big, huge requests. This is a huge topic spanning a lot of different things. We're going to cover a handful of cases. We're going to talk about David Paulides. We're going to talk about missing. This is about missing people in the national forests of America.
Yeah.
And elsewhere.
Yeah. It's like it started as in the wilds of America, primarily in the national parks in the United States. And it spread to like covered North America. It's gone worldwide. It's right. Encompassed things that are in urban areas now. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a wide ranging topic of mysterious missing persons cases.
This thing is big. If you're into that kind of stuff, you know, it's going to be right up your alley.
Yeah.
Like we say, you're going to blow your load. But here's the thing. If you want to blow your load early, you can't wait. You don't want to edge. You got to check the episode show notes. I mean, if this is your first episode, welcome to the show. Here's the thing, though. Longtime listeners will know, you got to check the episode show notes. You got to check the episode description, and you have to...
you got to look for the timestamp.
You got to look for the timestamp. I know it's not hidden. It's not missing. It's never going to go missing in any kind of forest or anything like that, mysteriously. It'll always be there.
Yeah.
It's always there, and it'll tell you exactly when the research starts, because first, Andy and I have to expand on the lore of the show.
Art's crotch chopping me while he's doing this.
I am crotch chopping D-Generation X style crotch chopping and saying that we have to talk about another bunker sighting.
To be honest, since the dawn of COVID, we were in quarantine for quite a while, separated from each other. Mr. Bunker, meanwhile, was traveling the world, and he was sending us postcards, and eventually he started visiting Bunk Funkers. Bunk Funkers started seeing him out and about, mm-hmm. and this is a trend that's continued. And honestly, things are really spiraling at this point. I don't want to say out of control, but I don't know where this leads.
You know, we're not the smartest guys.
We're not the sharpest tools in the shed.
We were looking kind of dumb with our finger and our thumb up our bum.
In the shape of an L in our buttholes. Well. The shit start coming and they don't stop coming. No, good thing I'm on the open face toilet because I'm running.
You're a real Shrek.
Yeah.
You're a real Shrek too.
I'm a believer. It's me, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Where are we going? Where are we going
Bunker sighting.
Bunker sighting. We're spiraling out of control. Here's the thing. I mean, you know, these bunker sightings. Last week, we learned about the possible creation of a Bunk Avengers.
Yeah.
This is a group of, we don't know what.
Not superheroes, but a group. I don't know. It's a group of people committed to some sort of ideal, possibly or not.
Yeah. So to catch you all up, you know, obviously there's Peon Musk, the undead Sasquatch that Bunker killed with a katana and raised with blood magic. Then he went and apparently killed the Flatwoods Monster.
Yeah, at a disc golf course he killed.
At a disc golf course in Texas. We don't know if the Flatwoods Monster has been raised from the dead yet or not.
Right. We also learned at some point that Mr. Bunker has started some rival to Tesla called Bunkla.
That's true. Forgot all about that.
They've been Frankensteining cars together, but now they're also just like rebranding existing cars by writing over the names in Sharpies. Mr. Bunker and Peon Musk built some sort of an airship. So there's a lot of stuff happening right now. A lot of moving pieces.
It seems like this Bunk Avengers trend is continuing.
Right.
Bunkers, will let you know a little secret. We've gotten more bunker sightings than we can actually include.
Right.
In an episode.
Right. So we're kind of...
The story will unravel every week.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to stay tuned because these are actively happening, these sightings, and it's continuing to contribute to the developing lore surrounding Mr. Bunker.
It's incredible lore.
His undead Sasquatch, Peon Musk.
So we just received another one. This is from another. This is from another committed, loyal Bunk Funker, Chris from Scotland.
Scotland, Chris. You'll have to rate our accents. Chris, are we doing a good
find
job?
This offensive at all?
Is this insulting to the Scottish people?
I'm gonna go have an iron brew.
I tend to think, Chris, that all accents that Art and I do are insulting to the people who add those accents.
We're just insulting to be around in general.
Just obnoxious kind of jerks.
I love Scotland. I have Scottish heritage, which I think is very silly for people to talk. I have no connection to Scotland, but I have Scottish heritage. I love Scotland. Beautiful, amazing country. If you can ever go visit, I mean, obviously can't really do it right now. They like lifted their drawbridge or something and you can't even get in. The only way you can get in is that drawbridge, but just beautiful countryside, beautiful cities, castles, locks. I mean, the whole thing. It's a fucking great place to go.
Yeah.
You really should go to Scotland if you ever get the opportunity. I can't say nice enough things there.
And I love
I went
Scotland.
There and I left and I haven't been happy since. But Chris writes in, Chris works on a oil rig out in the sea.
Out in the sea.
And so Chris was working back on the oil rig But apparently he saw Mr. Bunker. Said he was leaving the rig one night, or the place where he works on the rig. Says he looks down towards the water. I mean, you got to imagine this is probably nighttime out on an oil rig.
It's probably just bright lights on the oil rig, but it's all dark around.
Yeah, just the black emptiness of the sea.
Crashing against the support beams for the oil rig.
The smell of that salty sea air. The
coolness of the wind.
Maybe a lone seagull.
There's mist in the air.
Mist.
Yes. Mist.
They wouldn't be out at night, but maybe there's
you
one.
You can probably hear this low hum of the machinery.
Oh, we're really setting the scene here.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's leaving the he's leaving his place of work one night. And he looks down towards the water. He notices a boat emerging through the darkness. Thick fog surrounding the platform. At first glance, it looks like a fishing boat that's gotten too close to the rig. But upon closer inspection, he appears to be looking at the orca from Jaws.
You know, the boat from the movie.
You know, the boat from the movie.
The orca was the boat in the movie Jaws.
It is definitely not what we thought originally when we first read the story, which was that Chris had accidentally said that this was the shark. The shark was
there was some
orca whale.
Confusion between a gray white shark and
but
an
also
orca
you
whale.
Can see where the confusion might be.
Orca is actually a dolphin.
What?
Yeah, orcas are dolphins.
They're part of the dolphin family, but they're not dolphins.
No, they're dolphins. They're in the dolphin family.
I don't know about that one, Chief.
Okay.
You're no marine biologist.
No, I just have a weird fetishization for fish.
Anyway, he's looking at the orca from Jaws, which is the boat from Jaws. And out of the cabin emerges two figures that look eerily like Quint and Hoppa. Hooper.
Hoppa.
Get the Hoppa. It quickly becomes apparent that it's Bunker and Peon Musk.
Whoa.
So you gotta, I mean, you know, Bunk Funkers, we like to leave Bunker's image. One, he doesn't let us talk about his image very much, but we like to leave it up to the imagination.
Yeah.
He's whatever you think he looks like.
Yeah.
But he does have a very Quint from Jaws appearance. And I mean, you know, Peon Musk is kind of gross looking, but I think him dressed up like Hooper is very cute.
He does have, he's very gross, but in a very Richard Dreyfuss sort of way.
Yeah, he's gross like Richard Dreyfuss.
You get it.
You get it.
You understand.
He's a gross looking guy. Anyway. Next thing I know, that fucker fires a flare up at me. Can you believe this?
I believe that, yeah.
Yes, I actually can. I duck out of the way. I'm sure you did a very cool roll. Right. I like to imagine Chris did a roll, like Zelda.
Right.
Like in Zelda when Link does rolls. Right.
I was thinking because of the setting, I was thinking more like Solid Snake.
Oh, that's even better.
This is like a Solid Snake type
of
character.
Yeah.
He like rolled and ended up behind a stack of boxes.
He notices that the flare extinguishes very quickly, and he can see writing on the cartridge. It turns out it's some sort of scroll.
Oh.
On it, Bunker appears to have written that he wants us to investigate the Japan Airlines Flight 1628 incident.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go. I mean, we got an episode topic.
I guess we got something to look into.
Oh, boy. Underneath, Peon had scribbled something about it being long overdue, that we also do an episode on Sasquatches, too, which, okay.
Okay, Peon.
Why do you have to be so fucking passive aggressive with us?
Right. You see us every week. You couldn't just tell us while we're on our car ride. You're sitting in the bunker eating nachos, which to you is just the crumbs at the bottom of the tortilla bag with like the with just shredded cheese. It's not even melted.
Yeah.
Just the pre-shredded cheese.
Gross. Not even like a walking taco. Yeah,
it's not even good. Peon Musk.
Fuck you,
Peon Musk.
No, don't fucking stare at me, Peon Musk.
Fuck you.
Fucking go take a walk. Don't bother us when we're fucking recording.
We're working here.
We're fucking working hard. What are you doing? I don't give a fuck what the water heater's doing.
Jesus Christ, will you shut up about the water heater? That's what I thought.
You lived your whole life without a water heater. It wasn't until you become undead and you start living all these luxuries. Now you're a bit of a fucking princess. No, we're not going to take a stop at the comic book store. I don't care how good you are at a yo-yo. I don't want to see your tricks.
Jeez. So needy. Just because he got murdered and separated from his whole family and they got reanimated as a some sort of a servant to a psychopath.
Quit saying that shit about Chechnyans. Quit making rude comments about Chechnyans. Peon Musk. I'm sick of you saying rude shit about Chechnyans. Oh, quit it.
God, he's got a mouth on him.
Disgusting.
Sassy.
Well, anyway.
Sass Squatch.
Turns out that Bunker and Peon Musk were actually on their way to Loch Ness in Scotland to look for Nessie after just having been on the hunt for Moby Dick. God loves a trier. Anyway, hope you're well. Cheers, dudes. Chris.
Wow. So the Bunkvengers is growing by possibly Moby Dick and the Loch Ness Monster?
I guess they were looking for Moby Dick, and then they were, we don't know.
Were they just trying to kill Moby Dick? Finish the job?
Turns out it was a real book.
Turns out that was a biographical. Herman Melville was writing a reel. That was just a
call me dramatic Ishmael. Retelling. I mean, call me egg on my face. I thought that was fiction. No, it looks like we've got Loch Ness Monster. We've got Peon Musk. We've got, we don't have names for these people either. I mean, Bunkfunkers, what do you think their names are?
Hold on, Art. I'm going to send you a copy of Moby Dick through your email. 1 second. You've got Ishmael. Thank you. Anyway, this Bunkvengers thing is really getting out of hand.
We were on an oil rig together in the fucking North Sea. I would throw you overboard.
And I would welcome it.
This is getting crazy. He's really truly building a team. Chris, first of all, thank you for your sighting. I mean,
Chris, this is incredible.
You know, firing a flare at you. You're ducking out of the way. We apologize for that.
Yeah, you were in the line of danger with Mr. Bunker and Peon Musk. We're sorry about that, but you know, thanks for sending this sighting in, because this is truly incredible. You know, we thought it couldn't get any wilder when the Flatwoods Monster might join the crew of the Bunkvengers, but to add Nessie into the mix?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically the Hulk, right? That's going to be kind of like the Hulk to the Avengers.
Like a Hulk that can't leave the water at all. That has to constantly be...
Might have been an oversight.
I can't wait to see how Mr. Bunker rectifies that.
Yeah, it might have been an oversight.
Unless there's something about Nessie we don't understand and Nessie can go on land.
We have not covered Nessie. We've not covered a lot of those topics.
Yeah.
Including Sasquatches, which we'll get... Oh, quit it. Oh, I don't want to see your fucking bow tie. Okay, okay, you look cute in the bow tie. Yeah, you look cute in the bow tie. It's fine.
Yeah, he looks good. Do you think his flesh is rotting more? It smells worse, and he looks more desiccated by the minute.
I don't understand blood magic. Dark blood magic,
yeah,
so
yeah.
Maybe Bunker has to do another spell to help keep Peon up to date here. But, yeah, I mean, we've got Moby Dick, and we've got the Loch Ness Monster, too. I guess he's got the oceans covered.
Yeah. The Bunkvengers are going to cover land, sea, and air.
You know, Aquaman was part of the Super Friends. He really couldn't do shit, jack shit, unless it was the oceans. So,
you know, though, he could have made like a bunch of marine mammals beach themselves all at the same time, and that probably would have been pretty distressing
for the animals.
Well, yeah, but probably for people on the beach too.
Oh God, I gotta do it. Aquaman is telling me to fucking torpedo myself through this luscious beachside condo in Malibu.
Yeah.
I have to do it.
Aquaman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I fear a world that is being taken over by Mr. Bunker. I really do.
Yeah, he's kind of like passed through this phase of cartoonish villainy to spread his message, and he seems to be headed in the direction of super villainy.
When we were first abducted many moons ago, Andy, I never thought that it would have come to this. I never thought that we would be looking at Bunk Tech Industries, Bunkla, and Bunker as the head of a multi-conglomerate national organization of either super villainry or super hero-ry. We haven't decided yet.
We could not have foreseen this.
It's unsettling. It's scary.
It's, yeah, it's a concern.
And I think it's something that every bunk funker is going to have to look over their shoulder for.
Yeah. Who knows what you might see? I mean, keep your eyes peeled, bunk funkers.
Stay frosty.
Yeah. And
enjoy a frosty from Wendy's.
From Wendy's.
Our sponsor.
Our sponsor. You can get everything at Wendy's for looking over your shoulder. Have a cool frosty.
That's right.
Get a hot baked potato.
Yeah. You want a
spicy chicken sandwich, home style chili.
They got great spicy nuggets.
Great spicy nuggets. All the spicy chicken.
I'm not a big fan of their new French fries. I miss the old ones, but hey, wow. To each their own.
Yeah. Jeez. And they have breakfast now. Get out there and
get
yourself a breakfast baconator.
I didn't know they had breakfast now.
It's not bad.
You had it?
I had it.
Ooh, yeah. Good. Well, anyway, speaking of having it.
Da 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 da. I'm having it. That's the new Wendy's jingle.
It's in your mouth.
Get it the way that you want it. Wendy's.
They're just taking over every other slogan. Wendy's. It's your fourth meal. Live mas. Live more.
Wendy's. Think about something other than tacos.
Wendy's. When you're here, you're pretty much an acquaintance.
Wendy's. Reasonable amount of rules and decent food.
Can't think of the other ones.
I want my burger back, burger back, burger back, burger back.
I don't even remember the segue I had here, but big, just like Wendy's ever expanding slogans and menu. Today's topic, I mean, Andy, is spanning massive.
It's ever expanding, and you can get it any time of day.
It's true. This is a big one. This is a big enchilada. Take a Tums.
Yeah, put your sweatpants on because you're going to need them.
Yeah. This is, if you were already full from American Thanksgiving,
undo your belt again.
This is another heap and helping. So let's get into it here. This is Missing 411 here on Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast.
Funkers, today we're talking about a broad topic that's referred to as Missing 411, a name which is derived from a series of books by David Paulides. Missing 411 is, I feel, a big topic and kind of nebulous. It might be helpful to just start right up front with a description of what Missing 411 is all about before we start actually diving into it.
Andy, I couldn't agree more with you, buddy. And you bunk funkers are in luck because I know just how to explain this topic for maximum effectiveness. So bunkfunkers, let me give you the missing 411 on missing 411. Let's say some national park is disappearing your hiking girl. You gotta give them one of these.
Oh, bunkfunkers. You can't see this, but Art appears to be pantomiming masturbation in my direction.
I'm pumping and firing a shotgun, Andy. It couldn't be more obvious. It's a shotgun.
Oh, okay. I thought you pumping the shotgun was you pumping your dick gun. And I thought you pulling the trigger was you stimulating your prostate.
What a mix-up, you buffoon.
Jeez.
You goob.
Oh, boy.
You know you walked in on me masturbating and anally pleasuring myself one time, Andy. And now that's all you can see me doing. You gotta move on, Andy. Come on.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't have been doing that in our shared booth at Pizza Hut anyway.
Well, I was excited about getting a free personal pan pizza.
We all get excited about the prospect of personal pan pizzas and pizzones. You don't think I've gotten hard thinking about a pizzone before?
Yeah.
But I don't jerk off.
I knock out a few pizzones.
Don't
after
jerk.
A rough day, you come home, get your nap, you get your tissues, get your moisturizer, you knock out a few pizones. I've done it.
Yeah, we've all been there. Look, let's all move on from Art's Pizza Hut masturbation history and actually talk about Missing 411. I'll be honest with you, Bunk Funkers, Missing 411 is to me, at least, a pretty wide-ranging topic with a lot of facets. And frankly, right at the top, we're going to cover some pretty sad and or tragic stories. I'm going to explain Missing 411 like this. It's basically looking deeper into strange disappearances of people. Obviously, that's not a super helpful description. So let's talk a bit about the history of Missing 411 and some of the background of the author, David Paulides. That'll probably help illuminate this topic just a little bit.
Very true, Andy. David Paulides is a former police officer serving in both the Fremont and San Jose police departments, which are both in the U.S. state of California. Paulides spent most of his police career, 16 and a half years, with San Jose PD. Now, according to him, he did a variety of jobs while on the force in San Jose, including SWAT team, vice. He did detective work and working in street crimes as a street decoy. Now, working as a street crime decoy could mean that, you know, Paulides pretended to be a drug dealer or drug buyer or acted as some other perpetrator of a street crime. But, we here at Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast prefer to believe that David Paulides mostly acted as a decoy prostitute. Because let's face it, look at a picture of David Paulides. I'd buy sex from that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't want to be wrapped in those chiseled arms while the nape of their neck was tenderly tickled by the mustache goatee or mustache or whatever facial hair he had at the time? He can wear it all. I mean, the guy, he's classically handsome.
Built like a brick shithouse, I'll tell you what.
Great chin on that guy.
You know, you're a lot of things, Art, but you're not wrong.
We're both thinking it.
Paulides is a sexy man. Now, according to Paulides himself, after he left the San Jose PD, he got a job with a tech company, which led to him becoming an executive doing investigative work on partner firms and acquisition targets. After retiring from the technology industry, Paulides says he was given funding to prove once and for all if Bigfoot, the famous North American cryptid, was a hoax or not. In 2004, Paulides established the North America Bigfoot Search Organization, which we might call NABS. Paulides now serves as the executive director of NABS. NABS has focused on trying to prove the existence of Bigfoot through DNA evidence obtained from Bigfoot samples. Eventually, this culminated in a white paper that claimed Bigfoot was a distinct species, the product of an unknown ancestor mating with a female human. The results were pretty controversial, and we're not going to get into all of that right now because we're talking about Missing 411 and not Bigfoot. But it is still interesting.
Interesting indeed, Andy. It's also worth mentioning that in addition to hunting for Bigfoot, Paulides is also a Mutual UFO Network or MUFON investigator. So anyway, let's fast forward here a little bit. In about 2009, David Paulides was conducting research at a national park in the United States. We can only assume it was either Bigfoot or prostitution sting related. We don't know. So while Paulides was in his room, two off-duty park rangers came a-knocking. Fortunately, not to purchase sex, but to share concerns with him that there were too many people disappearing from national parks and not enough was being done by the U.S. National Park Service to investigate, track, and understand these disappearances. The visit from these two rangers led Paulides to begin working on the project that would eventually be Missing 411. In 2012, Paulides published two books on these strange, unsolved disappearances. Since then, Paulides has written seven more Missing 411 books, and there have been two documentaries made on the topic. Paulides also serves as a director of the Can-Am Missing Project, a group of retired police officers, search and rescue experts, and others who have come together to investigate and better understand cases of persons who go missing in the North American wilderness. Paulides helped launch the Can-Am Missing Project in 2011.
For research, we reviewed a Missing 411 book published in 2018, Missing 411 Law, which is land, air, water. We'll most likely just call it Law from here on out for brevity's sake. In Law, Paulides lists the total number of Missing 411 cases that have been covered in the books to that point as 1,135. These missing persons cases were all generated between the years 1572 and 2017, though the vast majority are from the 20th or 21st centuries. Over that long stretch of time, it's safe to say that the total of missing people exceeded 1,135. Heck, the U.S. National Missing and Unidentified Persons System claims 600,000 people go missing in the United States every year. So, clearly not all missing persons cases are missing 411 cases. In law, Pilates outlines what he calls, quote-unquote, profile points, which help describe some of the factors that make a missing persons case a missing 411 type case. One of the more common things Pilatus notices in missing 411 cases is that search and rescue teams often bring in teams of dogs to help track the missing person. These are dogs trained to pick up the scent of the missing person or human remains and hopefully lead searchers toward the missing person. In missing 411 cases, Pilatus says, quote, "In nearly 99% of the cases I have documented, bloodhounds brought to the point where the victim was last seen cannot find a scent, aren't interested in tracking, or seem oblivious to the scent," end quote.
Another important profile point is the weather. In a lot of missing 411 cases, bad weather plays a part in either the disappearance or the search for or recovery of the missing person. Typically, this plays out where a person goes on a hike or something like that, becomes lost. Then the weather gets really bad when people go to look for that person. There's also incidences of missing persons being found in places where searchers have already looked. You know, so for example, searchers may comb an area and find absolutely nothing. Then the next day, the missing person is found in the same area where the searchers were the day before. In law, Paulides brings up that other researchers have suggested to him that the missing person are being placed in these locations to be found. Paulides cites an example of a person found lying on top of a fallen tree, which had fallen during the search effort. So the person could not have been, you know, under the tree when they initially went missing. Missing persons found in bodies of water are also mentioned by Paulides. Proximity to water is another point that reappears in a lot of these cases and is clearly something Paulides thinks is important to these cases. In fact, one missing 411 case, called A Sobering Coincidence, focuses on cases where primarily young men mysteriously disappear and are eventually found dead in a body of water. Beyond the cases chronicled in A Sobering Coincidence, the other missing 411 books show other victims who are found in or near bodies of water, even if those locations could have been challenging for the missing person to get to.
Missing clothing is another important profile point. In these cases, the missing person was found with articles of clothing removed, or some of the missing's clothing was recovered even if the person was never found. In law, Pilatus directly addresses some of the skeptical criticism regarding this profile point. Skeptics have pointed out the phenomena of so-called paradoxical undressing as a possible explanation for the clothing removed by missing persons. Paradoxical undressing is typically seen in those suffering from the later stages of hypothermia, where muscles fail, which sends a rush of warm blood to the extremities, and makes the sufferer feel hot, and then they undress in confusion. In law, Pilatus responds by pointing out that some missing persons found to have missing clothing are children, who were too young to remove their own clothing, according to their parents. Pilatus also points out that some victims found with missing clothing were not in a hypothermia-friendly environment long enough to actually develop hypothermia. In addition to these points, Pilatus also brings up these other profile points. In missing 411 cases, people tend to disappear in the afternoon / evening just before it gets dark. The missing 411 persons may have some type of disability or illness. In a similar vein, some of the missing 411 persons are considered exceptional achievers, possessing high intellect and or being good at sports or especially proficient in some other field or area of study. Missing 411 victims, which are found alive, which is not a high percentage, are generally unable to remember anything about their experience of being missing. Equipment malfunctions also frequently play a part in folks going missing or in hampering efforts to locate the missing. Big rocks and granite are also a profile point. According to Pilatus, lots of found missing 411 people are found near boulders or other big rocks. Lots of people go missing from Yosemite National Park in the U.S., which is home to a lot of granite. Another thing that's not listed as a profile point, but which gets mentioned in cases whenever it comes up, is if the person is German or of German descent or has a German name.
So basically, if Paulides reviews a missing persons case that encompasses some of these profile points, it might be considered a missing 411 case. I guess, ultimately, David Paulides has a monopoly on what's considered a, quote, true missing 411 case. So he could say anything is a missing 411 case if he really wanted to. But generally speaking, the cases have some combination of those profile points. Now, Paulides mapped out all of the missing 411 cases and determined the cases are generally clustered together in certain areas. In order to be considered a cluster, there have to be at least four missing 401 cases in the area. As of 2017, Paulides mapped 59 clusters in the USA and Canada. Clusters can cover big areas, such as Yosemite National Park, or confined to more local places, like when a few people go missing from the same town or county. If you look at the map, there's kind of a horseshoe or ring type shape in the western US and Canada, with Nevada kind of in the blank space. There's another cluster in Arkansas/Missouri in the Ozark National Forest area. There's a cluster in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park area in Tennessee. There's case clusters around the Great Lakes region and also in New England. To help illustrate the profile points and findings, which helps to understand just what constitutes a missing 401 case, we're going to talk about some of the cases profiled in law.
As we mentioned, law is an acronym for land, air, water. Law is set up as a collection of disappearances on, not surprisingly, land, air, and water. And the book is organized by those different types of cases, as well as a section on triangles, like the Bermuda Triangle. To explain a little more clearly, the water disappearances in the book aren't really cases where people were on the water and disappeared. They're mostly where people disappeared from land and were ultimately found in water with no clear reason for the person to have gone into the water. So these are similar to the cases covered in Missing 411, A Sobering Coincidence, which we mentioned a little bit ago. Now, while we'll get into the air and the water disappearances eventually, just like law, we're going to start with land disappearances. First, let's cover the disappearance of Carl Reinhardt. Carl was a 5-year-old who disappeared on July 19, 1930, near Lake Cuyamaca, which is in the Cuyamaca Rancho, California State Park in Southern California. Young Carl traveled to Lake Cuyamaca with his family, his parents and older brothers aged 13 and 10. The family arrived at the park on the 18th of July, and the older Reinhardt boys began talking about climbing nearby Cuyamaca Peak before breakfast the next morning, the 19th. So, in the morning, the older boys got up at 5 a.m. and set off for the peak, which is further than a mile away from the lake. When Daddy and Mommy Reinhardt woke up, they found that not only were the two older boys missing, so was little Carl. After a few hours, the older boys came back, but not Carl. A search for Carl was started at 11:30 a.m. on the 19th, but Paulides says the reports aren't clear if the parents had any idea where Carl went, or even if it was suspected that he left with his brothers. The search effort for Carl involved many search teams on the ground, U.S. Army planes flying overhead, and searchers in the lake. At 11:30 a.m. on the next day, the 20th, Carl was found sleeping under a bush, a full 12 miles away from his family's camp. The Los Angeles Times described Carl as, quote, scratched and hungry, but otherwise unhurt, end quote. According to Paulides, it's important to note that Carl was sleeping because when missing children are found alive, they tend to be sleeping or very groggy. Paulides also says that children between the ages of 4 and 6 who are missing in mountainous areas are found, 95% of the time they are found 2.3 miles or fewer away from where they went missing. So, like, if they find a missing kid aged 4 to 6 that's in a mountainous area, 95% of the time they're like 2.3 miles or fewer from where they went missing, if that makes sense. To Paulides, the distance covered by Carl is suspicious, especially considering that Carl had a birth defect, making it difficult for him to walk. Paulides also points out that Carl was found in an area that was previously searched and that there are large boulders in the Cuyamaca Peak area. In law, Carl Reinhardt's profile ends with this sentence, quote, Reinhardt is a German surname, end quote. I think it's also worth pointing out that while rare, missing people can be found alive and still be considered missing 411 cases. It all depends on the factors of the disappearance. So to recap, here are the profile points covered by this case, which makes it a missing 411. Number one, disability. Carl Reinhardt had a birth defect, making walking a challenge. Water. The family was staying by Lake Kaimaka. Distance. Carl was found quite far from the family's camp. The missing was found in an area that was previously searched. And let us not forget that Reinhardt is a German surname.
From sunny Southern California, let's head to my home state of Illinois. Come on, bunk funkers, feel the Illinois. Girls, rock you boys. We'll get wild, wild, wild. But not too wild so that we go missing. In this case, Alexander Maitland. Ah, fuck. Always close enough, but never. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride with me. Yep,
with the pronunciation.
Alexander Maitland, aged 26, and Robert Case, aged 14, both disappeared while on a duck hunting trip along the shores of Lake Michigan near Glencoe, Illinois. Now, if you're not familiar with the area, Glencoe is in Chicago's North Shore, which are the suburbs stretching, you guessed it, north from Chicago along the shore of Lake Michigan. So Maitland and Case decided to go duck hunting the afternoon of December 26th, 1927, telling their family, they were brothers-in-law, by the way, to expect them home for dinner. Well, they never showed for dinner, and the family contacted the police. A search was mounted, which lasted for 5 days and included efforts from local police and the Coast Guard. According to the Chicago Tribune, Glencoe police borrowed two police dogs from nearby Northbrook, but the dogs couldn't track the two men. Three other dogs trained to follow human scent likewise could not find the men. Because Maitland and Case were part of a wealthy family, there was speculation at the time they were kidnapped. A person made a ransom demand, but turned out that was a hoax. There was also speculation that the men fell through the ice on Lake Michigan and died in the lake. The Coast Guard did not agree with this assessment, saying they did not find any evidence of a sunken boat and that the water along the shore was not deep enough for the men to have fallen in and drowned. Ultimately, the men were never found, nor were their bodies ever recovered. Paulides writes that the assessment of the Coast Guard is a key factor making this disappearance a 411 case. Here's what Paulides says in Law, quote, "If the boys didn't fall into the lake and drown, where are they? There are entirely too many young, healthy, and active men that vanished in this area and were either never found or located under circumstances that don't make sense," end quote. So let's discuss the profile points for this case. One is canines. Dogs were used for the search effort, but they couldn't or wouldn't track the missing persons. Hunters. These men were on a hunting trip. While we haven't mentioned hunters previously, Paulides highlights when people are experienced hunters or disappear while hunting. In this case, both men were armed, so Paulides finds it difficult to believe that they would have been kidnapped. Typically, Paulides also points out that hunters are generally familiar with the terrain and are experienced in the wilderness, so it makes their disappearances even more strange. One of the missing 411 books covers stories of missing hunters. It's called Missing 411 Hunters. It's aptly named.
Yeah.
Weather. The Chicago Tribune notes that rain in the days after the men disappeared helped wash away possible clues to help find the men. And finally, a cluster. As we mentioned, these men disappeared from the Great Lakes region, which is a cluster area for missing 411 cases.
Again, those are two examples of cases that are classified by Paulides as land disappearances. The next group we're going to talk about, following, again, the order in the book, are air disappearances. Now, personally, frankly, I think these are pretty fascinating. In most of these cases, people get into an airplane. The airplane crashes or drops out of communication or otherwise goes missing, and the plane is never recovered. In some cases, the passengers are likewise not recovered. In the introduction to the air section, Paulides mentions the disappearance of Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, which disappeared and was never recovered. It's a pretty apt, though grim, analogy for the cases in this section of Law. It's worth mentioning, too, that not all planes go missing in the water like MH370 did. Some of these planes go missing over land and are still never recovered. Also, in the introduction to the air disappearance section, Politis cites an Associated Press article from 1976, which reviewed statistics showing at least 75 planes go missing every year. I don't know about you, bunk funkers, but to me, that seems like a heck of a lot of planes to just completely disappear every year.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually shocking. I'm making a very shocked face, which Andy can see.
Yeah, it's truly shocked.
Yeah. Let's dig into some of these missing, vanishing, mysterious missing planes. First, we're going to start with a case from Scotland.
Oh, Scotland.
A lot of Scotland in this episode.
Ooh, baby.
While most of the missing 411... I'm not going to do the whole thing. don't worry, bunk bunkers. While most of the missing 411 cases come from North America, Politis has found missing 411 cases from all over the globe, even Antarctica. This case comes from Scotland's Isle of Mull, which is a little more than 75 miles northwest from Glasgow. The disappeared in this case is a man named Norman Peter Gibbs, 55 years old, who disappeared December 24th, 1975. Norman Peter Gibbs was quite the character. He was a Spitfire pilot with the RAF Squadron number 41 during World War II. After the war, Gibbs worked as a professional musician, as a violinist, playing in multiple orchestras in Britain. He was playing with the London Symphony Orchestra in 1956 when he got into a row with the conductor. When he got into a row with the conductor and got the sack. He got into a fight with the conductor and they got thrown out. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, he fought with the conductor and he got fired.
You
got
to use a big word that I don't know. Row. I've never seen this word before.
It's British English.
It looks like row.
I'm trying to make this story applicable to the location.
He got in a row. Trick me so that I sound like a fool.
He got into a row with the conductor.
It's not very hard.
They sacked him.
Tough work. Anyway, he gets thrown out. In 1957, he joined the Surrey Flying Club and continued to hold a private pilot's license and fly regularly. Gibbs had more than 2,000 hours worth of flight experience. Politis describes Gibbs as, quote, a very accomplished pilot, had flown in very dangerous conditions and recognized the ability of whatever plane he was flying, end quote. On December 20th, 1975, Gibbs went to the Isle of Mull with his girlfriend, Felicity Granger. Gibbs was on the Isle of Mull scouting hotels because he was interested in buying one. The couple were staying at the Glenforsa Hotel. The hotel had a grass airstrip, which did not have runway lights. While staying at the hotel, Gibbs found out that he could rent a Cessna plane from the hotel manager, which he then went and did.
On December 24th, 1975, the day Gibbs disappeared, he and Granger flew the Cessna in the morning from the Isle of Mull to the Isle of Skye to look at properties. After looking, they flew back to Mull for dinner at the Glenforsa. After dinner, about 9:30 p.m., Gibbs and Granger went to the airstrip together. Gibbs got a couple of torches to light the airstrip and asked Granger to stay on the airstrip with the torches to guide him in for a landing. Gibbs took off. The plane went out of sight behind some trees. And that was it. Gibbs was never seen alive again. The initial search effort was huge, involving searchers on the ground, in the air, and in the sea. It lasted over a week, but turned up neither Gibbs nor the plane. Then, in April 1976, 4 months after Gibbs went missing, a local shepherd named Donald McKinnon found Gibbs's badly decayed body laying across a downed tree on a hillside about a mile from the Glenforsa airstrip. Rescue workers had to cut a branch from the tree to remove Gibbs's body. Politis cites an article from The Guardian, which explained that not only had the search effort covered this hillside back in December 1975, but that Donald McKinnon himself had personally helped in the search effort and had passed the same spot where Gibbs was found several times since the initial search. Gibbs's body was sent to Glasgow to be examined by a medical examiner. The medical examiner found that Gibbs only suffered small scratches and had no apparent conditions that would have prevented him from walking back to the hotel. The examiner also said the body's condition was consistent with having been in the elements for 4 months. The examiner officially listed the cause of death as exposure and suggested that Gibbs had died about 2 hours after he took off. Because Gibbs lacked any signs of being in a plane crash on land, it was suggested that he somehow got out of the Cessna and into the sea, not necessarily that the plane crashed into the water with Gibbs aboard. Then Gibbs climbed up to the hillside where he died. All this despite testing showing that Gibbs' clothing carried no sign of salt or sea organisms. Investigators postulated that traces of being in the sea were washed away during Gibbs' 4 months on the hillside. Ultimately, if the plane could be found, investigators believed the mystery of Gibbs' death could be solved.
In both 1986 and 2004, findings seem to suggest that the Cessna flown by Gibbs is in the sea off the coast of Oban. Oban is about 16 miles across the sea from the Glenforsa Hotel on mainland Scotland. Despite this, the Cessna has never been definitively recovered. While the mystery of Gibbs' death remains technically unsolved, David Paulides suggests that perhaps the drug GHB played a part. In the law profile, Paulides notes that in other books, he has profiled people who were missing, and when they were found, it was determined that high levels of GHB is in their bodies, which explains the missing simply laying down somewhere only to die from exposure. Paulides suggests GHB as a possible explanation for other water disappearances profiled in law. If you don't know, GHB is an initialism for gamma hydroxybutyrate.
Not bad.
Hydroxybutyrate. There you go.
You did a good job.
Which is a central nervous system depressant commonly referred to as the date rape drug. You might also hear GHB referred to as the forget-me-pill, Georgia homeboy, grievous bodily harm, La Rocha, Liquid X, Lunch Money, Mind Eraser, Pingus, Rib, Roach, Roach 2, Roaches, Roachies, Ropies, Rochas Dos, Roofies, Ruffies, Scoop, Zyrum, or Wolfies. I'm wow. Cool, man. I know yeah, a lot
you know
of
the street names.
For stuff. And I can pronounce them all correctly.
Yeah.
I might also be on GHB most times when we read these scripts.
I don't know. Something about the way you said I can pronounce them all correctly made me think of like Bobby Flay.
Yeah, Bobby Flay is he deals drugs. He cooks them up. He's cooking up a little bit more than a tasty steak, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
People abuse GHB as a party drug at things like, you know, clubs or raves, which I've been to a lot of. users may experience euphoria and an increase in sex drive, but they might also lose consciousness, get nauseous, hallucinate, get sweaty, become confused, get amnesia, feel exhausted, or fall into a coma. So, you know. Pros and cons.
Yeah.
GHB is odorless and colorless and is often mixed with alcoholic drinks. That's why the drug is often called the date rape drug, because it can be slipped into a person's drink. And although the person retains consciousness, they kind of become incapacitated, unable to fend off their attacker. Very sleazy.
Yeah.
Despite all this illegal usage of GHB, it's also legally used to treat narcolepsy and used in therapy for alcoholism and heroin addiction. So that's the thing. It's not entirely terrible. It has a very specific use. One other key point, and this is very key for us here at Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time, involves the owner of the Cessna piloted by Gibbs that fateful Christmas Eve. Apparently, the owner of the plane was an attorney by the name of Ian Hamilton. Now, we're not suggesting that our arch nemesis, Ian Hamilton, had anything to do with the disappearance of a person in 1975, but we are saying that our arch nemesis, Ian Hamilton's whereabouts on December 24th, 1975, are unaccounted for. Call me curious, mm-hmm. But I'm curious.
Yeah. 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 All right. This is really just another layer of mystery to this strange cake in this story. Interesting indeed.
Yeah. It's a verifiable fact. Look it up in the show notes research.
It's there. Ian Hamilton owned that Cessna. We will get to the bottom of this. Now, I think the profile points for the Gibbs story are pretty clear. The area where Gibbs was eventually found had been searched previously and was even revisited by one of the searchers after the official search had concluded. And then water. Obviously, Gibbs took off from an island, was flying over the water, and it is suspected he ended up in the sea before his death. So far, we've covered L and A disappearances. Let's now hit for the cycle and cover W, water disappearances. As we mentioned earlier, these are where missing persons are found in bodies of water without clear indication why or how the person ended up in the body of water. The case we're about to share is a good example of a water disappearance. In this case, the missing person was Michael Kelleher, 23 years old. Michael disappeared on March 29, 2017. On this night, Michael met some friends at TD Garden Arena, aka The Garden, in Boston, Massachusetts, to catch the Boston Celtics take on the Milwaukee Bucks. During the game, Michael had a few brews with his bros, and maybe a few more brews than normal as the Celtics lost to the Bucks 103-100. Hard-fought game, but the Celtics fell short.
Can't stop the Greek freak.
Can't stop the Greek freak. Michael left the Garden at 9 p.m., tried three times to get an Uber to take him home, but ultimately never completed a pickup with an Uber. Police determined the last confirmed location for Michael's phone was Paul Revere Landing Park in Boston around 11 p.m. Paul Revere Landing Park is across the Charles River from TD Garden. Michael never did make it home that night, and police were engaged by his family on March 30th, 2017. Police searched the Charles River, including using side-scanning sonar equipment to scan the river for multiple hours on April 3rd, 2017. Neither the sonar equipment nor divers from the Massachusetts State Police were able to locate Michael or any trace of him. Then on April 16th, 2017, more than 2 weeks after Michael disappeared, a person walking along the Charles River near TD Garden noticed something strange in the water. Boston police were summoned, and the something in the water was determined to be the body of Michael Kelleher. An autopsy was performed on Michael's body, but the details are not available to the public. Boston police said that Michael's body was free of signs of violence, and police did not suspect foul play. David Paulides is skeptical of police making these kind of statements, rather than the medical examiner. Not that he thinks that police are wrong in this case, but just that the medical examiners have the proper training and knowledge to make these determinations, and therefore are better suited to make these kinds of statements. Paulides says the important thing in a case like this is how long the body is in the water. If Michael Kelleher was only in the water for a few days, where was he between the time he disappeared and when he reappeared in the Charles River? If he was in the river the whole time, how was his body missed by the sonar equipment and dive team? According to Paulides, in other similar cases, officials have sometimes admitted that the bodies of missing persons were not in the water the entire time they were missing. As a recap, here are the key profile points for the disappearance of Michael Kelleher. Water. This is the big one here. Obviously, Michael's body was recovered from a body of water, the Charles River. The area where Michael was found, which was not far from where he was last seen and from where his phone was last confirmed to have been, was previously searched, and his body, or any other evidence, was not located.
Bunkfunkers, hopefully this gives you a good idea of what makes for a missing 411 case. Here's what David Paulides says, quote, "I remember an old slogan for the United States Postal Service. If it fits, it ships. Let's apply that to our research. If it fits, it sticks," end quote. That should clear it up if you're still confused.
Yeah, I think that
great line
really clears everything up.
So what do we make of these cases? I mean, that is just a little crumb of the cake.
Yeah.
Of missing 411. For his part, David Paulides has been hesitant to suggest an actual answer for what he thinks is happening to people profiled in missing 411 books. In fact, in the conclusion for Law, Paulides tells readers to keep an open mind about what might be happening. He says that many have written him with hypotheses, but that many can be proven wrong just by examining the facts. Here's Paulides in his own words from Law. Quote, "Contrary to what some people think, I am still not sure of what is happening to the missing people. Is it one suspect? Multiple entities, a case of abduction, or a series of random acts by something we don't understand," end quote. At points, Paulides has hinted that the true case slash nature of the disappearances profiled in Missing 411 might be covered up by the National Park Service. Certainly, at minimum, it seems clear that Paulides doesn't believe that the Park Service has handled these missing persons cases appropriately. At worst, Paulides perhaps believes the key to solving these missing persons cases and understanding what happened to the missing is already known to the Park Service. Paulides once said, quote, "I believe they being the National Park Service, do have the data. And the data they possess would shock the average American citizen, end quote. Paulides thinks the Park Service holds back this information because they believe people will start to avoid visiting national parks. One thing Paulides doesn't think is causing these disappearances is a serial killer or killers. Paulides thinks that a serial killer would leave behind more traditional evidence or some indication of their responsibility for these crimes. Since that's not seen, Paulides doesn't think a serial murderer is responsible.
While David Paulides has never given a definitive suspected reason for the missing 411 phenomenon, others have done some speculation for him, thinking that something supernatural is going on. Lots of things have been suggested, like ghosts, fairies, transdimensional abductors or portals, the Wendigo, and Chupacabra. It's also been suggested that people are being abducted from public lands so their organs can be harvested to provide transplants for the rich and powerful. There are those who believe that people are being abducted for sex trafficking purposes, or that children are being abducted to use in satanic rituals as sacrifices. As we said, Paulides is a self-described Bigfoot and UFO investigator, and both of these things have also been suggested as causes of the mysterious disappearances. Obviously, there's speculation out there that extraterrestrials are abducting people from public lands for study or other purposes. To me, I kind of feel like this is where Paulides might be headed, since he often points out when a person is exceptional in some way, either with high levels of schooling completed, good at athletics, or with some type of disability. In law, while describing the profile point of a person with disability or illness, Paulides writes, quote, "Many readers have stated that it appears to them as though someone or something is closely monitoring these people and wants to understand more about their genetic markers," end quote. Sounds like some textbook ET stuff to me. I don't know about you bunk bunkers. And then there's the Bigfoot angle, where it's been suggested that a Bigfoot or multiple Bigfoots, big feet, if you will, are abducting people in national parks, possibly by via an elaborate network of caves underground. Regardless of Bigfoot's responsibility on social media, the missing 411 cluster map has been overlaid with a map of the largest cave systems in the United States, suggesting that these cave systems somehow play a part in the disappearances. When you look at the two maps together, there does appear to be some correlation.
Well, Andy, skeptics would probably say correlation doesn't equal causation, and that's suggesting there's a connection between missing 411 cases and America's cave system is a little misleading. After all, missing 411 started as an effort to document unusual disappearances from U.S. national parks. National parks are home to a lot of caves. It only makes sense there would be some overlap. Plus, as we mentioned, missing 411 cases are only a small fraction of total missing persons cases in the United States. After all, about 600,000 people go missing every year in the U.S., but there are only 1,135 missing 411 cases at the time of writing law. Lots of people go missing that aren't missing 411 cases and therefore may not fit into the cluster map at all. If we were to map all missing persons, we might find something totally different. While we're on the topic of missing 411 skeptics, let's talk about Kyle Pollich. Kyle Pollich is the host of the Data Skeptic podcast and also wrote a piece about missing 411 for the Skeptical Inquirer, which was based on a talk he gave regarding missing 411. Pollich selected random pages using a random number generator from missing 411 Western United States and Canada, which is the first missing 411 book released. Pollich verified the facts of the first case on each page reviewed. Overall, Pollich found the facts are presented by Paulides were pretty much accurate. Paulides is accurate in presenting the facts. Missing 411 covers real missing persons cases and provides real information on those cases. As for the mystery of missing 411, Pollich says this, quote, "On the whole, I find no outstanding cases in my research of missing 411. There's a surprising absence of anything spooky. No one is found a decade later without having aged a day, or a missing 411 victim hasn't appeared enigmatically on the opposite side of the world. No cryptic notes or ciphers appear in the book's pages. The cases are disappointingly typical of what one would expect from a missing persons case. The proposed unusualness of these cases seems hardly greater than one would find for a rare and unplanned occurrence such as a disappearance," end quote. Pollich also looked at some data determine if people are more likely to disappear from a national park than from some other place. Polich found that people are probably less likely to disappear from a national park than from an urban area.
While Polich isn't buying into the paranormal aspect, is he biting on the idea floated by David Politis that the National Park Service is purposely withholding information on missing persons from the public? Well, no, not really. Politis has complained at points that the National Park Service has been uncooperative or evasive in responding to information requests from him. As Polich points out, Politis has written a lot of books on the topic and probably has filed and continues to file a bunch of requests for information from the National Park Service. To Polich, it's probable that the Park Service maybe doesn't respond in the fashion Politis expects because his requests are costly to fulfill and take up a lot of resources to respond to. While I think it's fair to say that maybe the Park Service should just respond to all of Politis' requests the same way, it's not necessarily evidence of an elaborate conspiracy to cover up something. Polich talked with a representative from the Park Service who said that missing persons cases are entered into a database called the National Law Enforcement Telecommunications System, or NLETS. Law enforcement agencies all across the country have access to NLETS. Further, Polich talked with a former park ranger and current author who suggested that the Park Service could use some reform because rangers are overworked and undertrained to handle some of the law enforcement type responsibilities given them. Maybe additional resources would lead to better investigations of persons missing in U.S. national parks. Polich sees the criticism of the organization of the National Park Service and the ranger system as possible evidence of a poorly run or maybe even corrupt government agency, not necessarily evidence of a vast conspiracy.
On that same topic, but with a bit of a different view, in 2017, John Billman wrote a piece for Outside Magazine on disappearances from U.S. national parks. In this piece, Billman found that the U.S. government doesn't keep very good statistics on people that disappear from national parks. The U.S. Department of Justice maintains a database of missing persons, but reporting to the system is only mandatory in 10 states, and use by law enforcement and or coroners is likewise not very mandatory. That means many missing people don't end up in that system. Further, Billman reports that in the wake of September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks on the USA, the U.S. Department of the Interior, the agency responsible for the National Park Service, decided to build a database to track law enforcement actions on all lands managed by the Interior Department. Apparently, employees at the Interior Department agencies hate this system because it sucks a big fucking fat ass and is fucked beyond repair. That could also be, that's also a great way to describe Andy and I.
Yeah, I think that should be the slogan for Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast. Sucks ass and is fucked beyond repair.
Billman found that in 2016, quote, only 14% of the several hundred reportable incidents were entered into it. The system is so flawed that the Fish and Wildlife, that's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, another Interior Department agency, has said no thanks and refuses to use it, end quote.
Aside from the reporting and tracking of missing persons, there's also the matter of actually investigating these disappearances. According to Billman, if you disappear inside a national park in the U.S., the search for you could play out very differently depending on the park, or even which part of the park in which you disappear. Billman writes, quote, while big national parks like Yosemite operate almost as sovereign states with their own crack search and rescue teams, go missing in most Western states, and with the exception of New Mexico and Alaska, statutes that date back to the Old West stipulate that you're now the responsibility of the county sheriff, end quote. Given that there really are very few codified standards on how to conduct search and rescue efforts, different jurisdictions can put wildly different amounts of resources towards such efforts. If you go missing in a national park in an area that's relatively poor and or sparsely populated, the search could be fairly limited due to financial / expertise constraints.
Regardless of anything we've talked about here, one thing is abundantly clear. Lots of people go missing all the time for lots of different reasons. While it seems like most of these disappearances have reasonable explanations, maybe some of them are unexplainable. Maybe, to understand these cases better, we actually need to consider the possibility that something supernatural might be at work here. Bone Funkers, whatever you do, if you do go into the wilds of this earth, make sure you're prepared. Be knowledgeable about where you're going and make sure you're ready for the elements. If you can, bring a friend. People are generally safer in groups than by themselves. Tell people where you're going, what you plan to do, and when you expect to return. Leave a note on your car. Take every precaution you can. Because if you find yourself out in the woods, not sure where you are, you'll be glad you did the little things, like filling up your canteen, packing, a heaping, helping of the whole enchilada. Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast will be right back after this brief message.
Hey, Bunk Funkers! This is Andy, and I'm here with my co-host, your co-host, Art. And we're coming at you today to let you know that we launched a Patreon! So if you have the means and you want to support the show, come visit us at patreon.com/MrBunkerPod and consider becoming a subscriber.
Get an extra podcast episode every month of our brand new show, Andy and Art Debunked, available only on Patreon. We're going to be covering various urban legends and myths. We'll do TV and movie commentary tracks and reviews. We'll do pop culture conspiracies and much, much more.
Becoming a subscriber will also get you access to our Discord channel, where you can chat with me and Art and other bunk funkers from around the globe.
You'll also get plenty of behind-the-scenes content and much, much more.
So please, help us support the show and keep the lights on in the bunker. Visit us at patreon.com/MrBunkerPod and become a subscriber today.
Welcome back, Bunk Funkers. That was our research, our slice into missing 411. But we're not missing. We're right here.
We're right here. We're just where we always are. Trust me. On the open-faced toilet.
You're not going to miss these ugly mugs. You know what I'm saying? Literally, we have these like, I mean, yeah. Peon Musk started
do pottery.
Doing pottery and he's never good at it. Andy, I mean, I got to tell you, obviously This is scary in a different way. Scary because it's real.
Yeah, people.
Very real.
Very real. I mean, that's the thing about this is that I think that there's been some kind of speculation from some corners that maybe David Politis has like sort of invented some of these missing persons cases. Not true. Like he has sources. He cites things. You can look at these up. These are real cases.
He's a little bit like us. He might be a fucking, I mean, not like us at all. He's handsome. He's got rugged. He's manly. He's a nice mustache. His testosterone levels are above average.
Yeah, he's an accomplished athlete and coach.
Accomplished. He's
beautiful family.
Beautiful family. He's probably doesn't have any existential dread whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
He knows how to cook chicken really well.
Yeah, he's an outdoorsman.
Yeah. But he ain't a fucking liar.
He's not a liar. He's He's a lot of positive things, but he's not a liar. We're a lot of negative things, but we're not liars.
That's right. Gosh, where do we even start here? Where the fuck do we even start? You know?
I mean,
my parents took me camping a lot. I've actually been camping a lot, but my parents took me camping a lot when I was a little baby. They used to tell me stories like they would like actual camping, like tents.
Right.
Andy, I could have been one of these missing 411 cases.
You know, we talked about Carl Reinhart in the script. In that section in Law, David Politis mentions that, you know, he doesn't know what the... obviously, this was like in the 1920s, 1930s. When was that one? I can't remember, but off the top of my head. But anyway, as we mentioned, you know, the bullies were 10 and 13, the older boys, and then Carl was 5.
Right.
It's not clear if the parents knew that the 10 and the 13-year-old were going to do this hiking thing.
Oh, yeah.
But Politis is kind of like, I'm not sure what the times were like, but the idea of letting a 10 and a 13-year-old like hike to a mountain by themselves seems like a pretty bad idea. And as a parent, like, I got to agree with him.
I mean, but this is like the 1930s. If you were 13 years old, you had like a full-time job and a full family.
Yeah. Well,
no,
you know,
but I mean,
we definitely will look at it differently today, probably.
No, I agree. But I mean, 1930s.
We don't know about the lives of the Reinhardts. Like, did they live out on a farm or something?
Right.
Like, maybe these like kids are accustomed to like working on a farm.
I don't know. I mean, when I was 13, I was a latchkey kid. I was walking home by myself.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not, it's like, I look back on that and I was like, why the fuck would they, what was I going to do? I was 13.
Right. It really makes you think now.
And I was like the guardian of kids younger than me. I walked some of the neighborhood kids home.
Right.
Who were younger than me, but like they lived near us.
Yeah.
It's like, what the fuck was I going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. If an adult man came and tried to abduct you.
Yeah, because like the whole thing about Stranger Danger is always like they're getting to the, they'll open a van, be like, hey, come here, come inside of it. But I feel like if somebody just tried to abduct us forcefully,
yeah,
what was I going to do?
Yeah, when you were 13, you were like, what, 65 pounds soaking wet?
I had a peach fuzz mustache that I refused to shave. I didn't shave until like the day I went to high school.
Never shaved.
I've never shaved.
He's not shaved since. Yeah, I mean, it does make you think about this. I mean, you know, and the scary thing is like the skeptical Paulich data like seemed to indicate way more people go missing in urban areas.
Yeah.
So like you were in an urban area.
Yeah.
If anything, you were probably more at danger doing that than you were camping.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
like it's scary.
There's a lot to branch off to. Yeah. Because in urban areas, there's actual, like, there's pedophiles and criminals everywhere. But, like, what kind of makes me laugh is, like, the idea that in some of these missing 411 books or in some of the responses to it, people think that there might be, like, a sex predator that's abducting these kids. And I'm kind of saying, who the fuck are these rugged mountain man sex predators camping out in the fucking woods looking for little boys?
You know, I do think that probably, like... Like, you look at the missing 411, like, spectrum of cases. are we going to find that there's one thing about it? Probably not. Like, there's a variety of reasons. Like, I'll bet some of these are probably, like, sexual predators.
I mean, Andy.
But I agree with you. It's like...
These rugged, like, fucking mountain cowboy men out in the fucking rural wilderness, like, living in the woods amongst nature, hunting for food. And little boys.
Right, right.
It's like, what are you, they're camping out in the wilderness just waiting for little boys?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a lot easier. But then you have to think, like, it would be a lot easier in urban areas. But then you have to think, like, there are probably sex predators that live in rural places.
Probably.
And then,
probably,
you know, if you live near a national park and there's not a lot of, like, city life where you could go abduct children.
Yeah.
It's like the national parks, there's lots of people visiting because they have those areas that are, like, you know, it's not like wilderness camping. It's like gentle camping. Where it might be easy to come and abduct children.
I don't know.
But it depends on the circumstances.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, you know, I watched the Missing 411 movie, which at the time of this recording is free on YouTube with ads. I wasn't too impressed by it, but like, I can't answer some of these questions. I really can't. You know, the big case that they cover is, I think it's Dior Coons. He's like this little 3 or 4 year old boy who went missing from a national park out in like Idaho or Wyoming. And it's like the parents were like 5 feet away from him. They turned their backs. It's like they were going to go down to the creek to go fish. And then the little boy was following them. And they were like, do you want to come or do you want to stay with grandpa back at the camp? The little boy goes, I'm going to stay with grandpa because he has candy. So they're like, okay. And he turns around. And they see him walking towards the camp and they're like, okay, he'll be fine. And they turn around and they go to the creek and then they come back and they're like, grandpa, where's the little baby? And they're like, he's like, oh, it disappeared. They've never found him. And so, you know, there's a big media frenzy. People think the parents killed the kid. The grandpa had his mental faculties weren't there.
Yeah.
You know, he was like on oxygen or something. Grandpa brought along his friend who was also kind of weird. A little off. People think it might have been hit, but it's like they were on like a big gravel road and the campsite was next to a very sheer, almost no one was coming down from that cliffside that they wouldn't have heard, and nobody could have really driven up or even walked up the gravel road because it was, you know, gravel's very loud. It's like, where the fuck did that kid go? And they They didn't found anything. Yeah. No boots, no shoes, clothing.
See, to me, a lot of questionable decisions there.
Oh, right? Yeah, I know. You're a parent.
Look, I'll tell you a story about my own life, ripped from my life headlines.
Ripped from the book of Andy Hart.
I went to a Walgreens one day with my son when he was like 2 years old. And he was like, you know, like doing what kids do. And it's like, I said, okay, we got to go to this and do this thing. And he's like, wants to run down the aisles and like have me chase him and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm not going to get into this in a store. Like, I'm not going to encourage this. So I'm just going to like, I'm going to keep an eye on him so I can see where he is. But I'm not going to like chase him. And I'm going to like keep telling him that he has to stop. And
this is the terrible twos.
And I'm like, I'm not going to run in the store. I'm not going to look like a maniac running through a store.
Like a bull through a china shop.
And like he went around a corner and I like get over there and I'm looking for him. He's not there. And I start to freak out like instantly because he's gone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where did he go? Well, I go around the next aisle. He's running out the door into the parking lot.
What the fuck?
He just took off into the parking lot.
Jesus Christ.
And it's right on the corner of two streets. So, like, he could have just, like, if I had been even a little bit slower, like, so I just bolt out the door and, like, grab him. And then he was, like, in big trouble.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, kids do unpredictable stuff all the time. Yeah. It's not like he, I mean, he was at that age where he was, like, just on the cusp of understanding that a parking lot is dangerous. But, like, I mean, the other day I got him from school. He's 4 years old now. He walked into the parking lot at the school. Like, just without, he was with a friend, and they just walked into the parking lot without looking. And it's like, kids aren't observant and at some stuff. Yeah, and they don't understand everything.
They're completely useless for a long, long time.
Yeah, they are, absolutely. And they make a lot of questionable decisions and things that don't make sense to anybody else. So it's like, to me, if you say, okay, we were walking to a creek bed and the kid's in the back, it's like, first, that's mistake number one. Like, the kid should be in front or in between two people.
Right.
That way, like when I'm walking with people, like, I always want to be the last person because then I can see what's happening.
Right.
Like, first of all, nobody cares if I get abducted from being at the end of the line.
No one's
like,
abducting
I fall down
you.
A cliff.
No one's abducting you.
Nobody. Yeah, right. Exactly. I'm a poor abduction target. First of all,
there's going to have to be like 8 different pedophile strongmen. Well, I guess
I'd like to see him lift me.
Yeah, I'd like to see him.
Look, there's literally no reason to abduct me. I have nothing. I'm not worth anything. I'd have nothing to offer anybody who would abduct another person.
Be like, you picked the lowest fruit.
Right.
Lowest hanging fruit, buddy.
So it's fine for me to be in the back of the line. Like, if, you know, and if something happens to me, people will be like, whatever.
He deserves
it. Yeah, fine. It was not that big a deal anyway. But then it's like, then I can see stuff that's happening. So, you know, it's like when I'm out with my family, I always go in the back. That way I can see what they're up to. And then it's like, it's a good opportunity to like say, hey, watch out for this. Or like, you're not paying attention.
Or you just hold on to the kid.
Yeah.
You make them hold your hand.
Yeah.
Which I know kids' hands are gross.
Hand holding is fine too. That works great.
You know, I mean, I'm not sitting here trying to shit on these parents. I'm not.
No, they've been through a horrible thing.
They've been through a horrible thing. But there are a lot of these where it's kind of just like, yeah, the kid gets missing. But then the question kind of becomes, how the fuck do they get where they end up? Because there are the missing persons cases where they end up being found and they're like 18 miles away. And you're like, in the missing 401 movie, Les Stroud makes multiple appearances. And they're trying to decipher this one case, which involves a German surname. Maybe. I forget his name. I'm going to call him Carl. And Carl, little baby Carl, this was like in the 1950s. He went missing. He was 2 years old. And he ended up like so fucking far away. He had to go through barbed wire fence. This was like a cattle area, cattle ranching area in wherever the fuck, Idaho, Oregon. I don't remember. And he's just so far away. And Les Stroud walks the path that he allegedly walked. And he was like out of breath and tired. He's like, how the fuck did this kid get all the way over here? Like, I don't know. I can't explain that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that kids get lost easy because they don't have a good sense of direction.
But you think that at some point they would just get tired and stop.
Yeah.
But I guess they also don't need as much energy, right?
Kids, I don't know. Kids have a lot of energy.
It's true.
Like, I mean, have you ever like been around a child, like a young child? How old was this kid?
2.
Have you ever been around a 2-year-old and somebody goes, boy, this is a really lethargic 2-year-old.
No.
Like this kid needs to, like everywhere I ever took my kid, people were like, man, I wish I had a quarter of his energy.
Your kid has a lot of energy.
Yeah. I mean, I know that it's my kid is probably like exceptionally energetic, but yeah. Like, I think
he's got it. I mean, he's energetic. No,
if he got lost, I mean, there's no telling how far away he could get if he didn't know where he was going, because he would just keep going, probably.
Yeah. I have little cousins who are around your kid's age, and it's like, they don't stop. You got to keep going. I'm like, dude, I'm fucking tired. Yeah. I don't want to play Spider-Man gets kicked in the nuts by Batman again.
50
and again
times
and again
a
and
row.
Again and again.
Like, yeah, I mean, they
do it the same. I'm like, can we play? Can you yes and with me? I'm trying to do fucking improv rules with him, and he's just not getting it. This kid is not going to be a good improviser. He's never going to make a Herald team.
Boy, nobody's going to make a Herald team anymore.
That's true. Theater's gone.
He can make his own Herald team.
Yeah, I mean, I figured you'd say something. There's just certain ones where it's kind of
I mean, that like through the barbed wire and stuff. Like, that's a weird one.
Where did that plane go? How did his body get into the tree? What happened?
Gibbs is a wild one because, I mean, honestly, there's the whole issue of, like, the plane appears to be at the bottom of the sea.
Yeah.
I mean, they found it, like, a guy doing, like, clam diving in 1986. I mean, literally diving for clams, not performing oral sex on anybody. Okay.
He wasn't diving for bearded clams.
Right, right. This was the regular sea clams.
Okay.
Like, found a plane under the water while he was like snorkeling. And then, you know, this like, there were some naval ships that were doing like coastline mapping. And so they were using like sonar or whatever to like map the coastlines. Mm-hmm. And they found an airplane that was at the bottom of the sea. Now that nobody's ever like pulled it out of the sea and like checked it. But I mean, it seems, most people, I think, are pretty convinced that it's probably the Cessna that Peter Gibbs was in. So it's like that ended up there. How did he end up, you know, back at the, you know, because this is across, like, this is not like right beside each other. You know what I mean? Like, this is not the sea right off the Isle of Mull. This is the sea like 20 miles away, like by the mainland.
So how the fuck did he get to where he was?
So it's like, did the plane crash and then like sort of drift over there and sink and nobody noticed it? And like, then how did he, like, obviously he ended up on the hillside, like less than a mile from the hotel. Like, he was very close, you know, like, or about a mile from the airstrip. Like, he was very close to the Glen Forsa. So like, the only thing that they can really think is that he either jumped out of the plane and into the sea, or the plane crashed into the sea, like right off of the coast. And then he like climbed up on the hillside. He had been in the sea, climbed on the hillside, and just sort of like succumbed to exposure. But then they say, why wouldn't he just walk? He had no apparent condition that would keep him from just walking back to the hotel. But maybe he was too deep in. I don't know. Maybe he was in the water for a while. Like, I kind of feel like Politis here. Like, did he have a drug in his system? Like, they probably wouldn't have checked for GHB at the time.
Yeah. I don't know. That's the thing with some of these cases, is they are just, they really fucking make you scratch your head and go, what the fuck happened? Like,
yeah,
you know, a lot of these wilderness ones, you know, you think, oh, mountain lion, eagle, some kind of big predatory bird could easily pick up a 2-year-old, take him far away, mountain lion. But then it's like they never have blood on them. Their clothes end up being ripped off. And
yeah,
there's this one they look at in the Missing 411 book or the movie. And I know we're discussing different ones here, Bunk Funkers, but, you know, the movie has this like little boy. He's 5 years old and he gets lost in one of these mountainous areas or national parks, and they can't find him for the longest time. They comb the whole fucking place, the whole creek. And then years later, they find the cap of his skull, a tooth, both pristine, picked clean. His shirt, his shoes, which also are just sitting out, perfectly clean, pristine shoes. Look like they haven't been touched in years. And his pants, the little boy's pants, which were turned inside out and picked apart, looked like they'd been ripped apart. And it's kind of like, you know, they interview the dad. That's very heart-wrenching. But, you know, the dad is like, I refuse to believe that it's a mountain lion, because a mountain lion would have, there would have been blood. It would have, if he would have been eaten, there would have been blood. There would have been mountain lion fibers on the clothing. None of that. Mountain lion would have tore his innards out. And, I mean, he's a little kid. You have a little kid. You know, they can't really dress themselves or undress themselves. So how the fuck did he take off all of his clothes? And why? And then they're like, okay. Then they find his, like, tooth and skull on an area that they already had searched years later.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like.
I think that's the thing that gets me is.
I don't know, dude.
Yeah. Like, the stuff like that is very baffling. And the ones where they've searched already, like even Gibbs, you know, it's like they searched that area and then he's on a downed tree. Like, how could they have, and they had to cut a branch to get him away. It's like, is it because his body had decayed, or is it because he was like under the branch? You know, it just doesn't, or like the Michael Kelleher thing, like they find him in the river, but they use sonar. They went up and down the river with sonar.
Yeah.
Like, how was he like, and we have no idea. Was he in the water the whole time? Or did he end up there after he had disappeared?
And that's in a highly populated urban area.
Yeah, that's
fucking Boston.
That's, I mean, and he's right by the garden. Like, this is a big, there's lots of people filtering in through there, tourists and locals.
You know, I was written like, hey, you know, don't fuck with Mother Nature. I have that written down in my notes. Mother Nature is built. She's got big thighs, powerful.
Yeah,
powerful thighs. She'll fucking crush you.
You know, I think a lot of these are like, you know, people are unfamiliar with the area.
Yeah.
Even if they're athletic and stuff, you know, they're by themselves.
You can be pretty athletic, but hiking will take it out of you.
Yeah, for sure.
One little slip.
Yeah, you can fall and get stuck somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like there are other, you know, incongruities, but I would guess, I mean, my gut kind of says maybe that a lot of these have sort of mundane explanations, like horrible explanations, but also like not anything that you would say, oh, that's super duper weird. Like with this little kid, like maybe they missed the body. The kid was dead. Like then animals start getting at it, like, you know, maggots and birds. That would do a little more of a picking than a like ripping and tearing.
Hypothermia, he takes off his clothes.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know, if he doesn't know how to take off his clothes, I don't know how that works in a paradoxical undressing state.
And I have no idea how you find all the clothing in different areas. I mean, obviously birds are picking at the fleece. He's wearing like fleece pants.
Also there's
for netting, also nesting.
Also there's this thing of like where people burrow.
Yeah.
Like if they're going to die from hypothermia, like people have been observed to like exhibit burrowing behaviors. So that's a possible explanation that gets floated sometimes too. I mean, I don't know. In a lot of these cases, if it makes sense that we talked about specifically, but it's kind of like people will burrow because it's like they're hibernating because of the hypothermia. So, I mean, I assume that the same rebuttal for the paradoxical undressing would be the same for this burrowing behavior, but it could explain why some people aren't found right away because they've sort of burrowed a little bit and then are unearthed later by like, you know, rain and stuff like changes the soil.
Andy, if I went missing, would you come look for me? Would you lead a search party for me?
Andy? I would participate in a search party.
You would participate, but you wouldn't lead.
Yeah. You know,
how many days, Andy? How many days out of your busy schedule would you come looking for your fucking podcast co-host?
2 hours a week.
Andy, God damn it. I need to know if you're going to come
2 hours a week.
Search for me.
2 hours a week.
I need more time. I need to know if you're going to be ride or die, Andy. You wouldn't fucking search for me. Why do I feel like if I went missing and you're in a search party and you find me and I'd be like, oh, thank God I'm saved. And you'd be like, oh no, I'm fucking lost now.
Oh shit. I should have stayed with the group.
Yeah, we'd both be lost.
You know, this is one of the real tragic things, reading the Billman piece for Outside Magazine. Like, he starts off telling this story about a guy who goes missing at a park in Colorado. And, you know, it's like after a few days, like, law enforcement just, they stop looking because they're like, we don't have a lead. We don't have anything else we can search. We've searched everything.
Yeah.
And awful. Like the guys, the missing person's dad just like quits his job, like sells his business, sells his house, and just like goes full time searching because like everything then after that is like out of pocket. And it's jeez. Like, I mean, if anything, I think this is like probably the big thing that Politis has turned up is that people go missing and then like we only search for a little bit of time and then they just kind of like the case stays open, but nobody's really like looking for them. You know,
that's a good segue, I think, because I do want to talk about Politis himself.
Yeah.
I obviously have a few things to say, which you may or may not know, but.
Oh, boy.
Well, I'll just say this. Politis, I'm going to plead with you to fucking get a new website. Update your website. You haven't updated it since the early 2000s. You don't have an SSL. You're not encrypted. It's not a safe place. It's the only fucking place you can buy his books is this shitty website. There's plenty of other places. You don't have to use Amazon. You can use other places to put your books up, okay? People are reselling his fucking books on Amazon for like hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
You can only get them on his stupid website.
Yeah,
which is unsafe. Use Squarespace. Use Wix. There's so many options for you, David Politis. I know you're making money on these books.
Yeah. Bunkfunkers, if you want to go buy a missing 411 book, make sure you go to the NABS website, the North America Bigfoot Search website. That's the only place you can buy it reputably.
Pisses me off.
You know, if you look on Amazon, the books are wildly expensive because they're resellers. If you do buy a book, don't try to resell it because Politis hates that. They don't sell to resellers. If they find out you're a reseller, they'll cancel your order. And David Politis will come to your house and show you what's what.
Yeah, he'll beat the shit out of you and then have sex with your wife.
Now, if you're into that, go for it.
Yeah.
Now, if you do order
and
a
then
book,
raise your kids better than you would.
Yeah, and he will do a better job than you. If you do buy a book from the Missing 411 collection, or even if you buy one of Politis's Bigfoot books, which are also available on the NAB store, like the Hoopa Project or Tribal Bigfoot.
That's Bigfoot playing basketball, right?
Oh, yeah. Hoopa. Yeah.
Hoopa.
Hoopa. If you do buy one of the books from the NAB's website, what you will receive in the mail is a book mailer from the U.S. Postal Service with a handwritten address label, possibly written by David Politis himself, because that's what I received.
Wow. Get the fuck out of town.
Handwritten.
No way.
Yes. Handwritten.
David, you can upgrade to these new systems, okay? It's going to help you out, buddy. I'm promising you. You don't need to have an unsecure... I am afraid of your website because it is unsecure. I don't know what database are you using to store the fucking processing information for payment. I don't like it. Just move. Get to the new century. Make a new website. It's very easy. Hey, contact me. I'll help you.
Yeah, David, if you do want a new website design, like email us, MrBunkerPod@gmail.com, and Art'll sort it out for you.
It's not that hard. I helped Mr. Bunker set up the MrBunkersConspiracyTime.com fucking website.
Yeah.
Works fine.
It works great.
It's a website. A
lot of...
gets all the info. A
lot of risque pictures of Elon Musk showing up on that website lately.
All right. Well, listen. You know, I think he got access to the system admin blog features, and he's just kind of been posting. I think he's kind of discovered, you know, himself. He might think it's social media.
He's discovering himself.
Yeah. Andy, I'm still a little hurt that you wouldn't come look for me, but...
I said 2 hours a week.
It's not long enough. I would look for you. I would walk fucking 500 miles, Andy. And then I would walk 500 more to look for you. But I know I'd find you.
It's a Scottish group.
I know I would know all the haunts.
Yeah.
I'd find every place that sells sausages.
Yeah. There's not that many places that I go. I'm not going to end up missing.
5 mile radius.
I'm not going camping. That's for sure.
You don't like camping?
Yeah. No. Why?
You don't like it?
No. Why? Why does anyone like camping?
Oh, I love it.
Why do you live in a house then?
Because I'd like to go. I mean, you know, it's, you know.
You could skip all this, all the trappings of the material life and just live in the grass.
It's nice to get outdoors, Andy. Go out into nature.
Yeah, you can go outside. I don't have to sleep in it. The best part about going outside is coming back inside.
It's nice you go out.
I deprive myself of that.
In the fucking wilderness. Makes you appreciate what you have in modern society.
Yeah. I already appreciate it, so I don't need to go camping. I appreciate it so much.
You hated camping. We've never talked about this.
I already appreciate modern life so much. I don't feel the need to even go camping.
You're a camp hater.
I'm not jaded.
You didn't like
about this one thing.
I don't know. I grew up camping, so I don't know. It's in my blood.
Yeah. I grew up in a house.
Yeah. Let's talk about Paulides other than his shitty website, okay, which he needs to read.
Do you have some more bones to pick with him?
No. What do you think? Do you think he's a charlatan? Because some people, he has an element of you, Andy, in a way where he kind of says like, huh? Pretty weird, huh? This missing case. Maybe something paranormal is going on. And then you're kind of like, is something paranormal going on? And he's kind of like,
Look,
UFOs.
Look, I,
what do you think? Portals. Could be portals.
He's talked about this at like paranormal conventions and like MUFON symposiums and stuff. Like I feel like that's where he's headed, you know, that it's Bigfoot, that it's extraterrestrial.
I think in other books,
he talks about it on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, he leans in it a little harder in other books, I think too.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, he's like trying to like stay away from it. And I get it. Like, and I applaud him in a way for saying, keep an open mind and like we have to consider all the evidence and stuff to find a true explanation for this. Like, I think that's a good thing to say. But I also think that he like benefits commercially.
Oh, 100%.
By creating more mystery on top of the existing mystery by like sort of floating these ideas out there, but not really ever definitively saying this. You know, I saw some chatter on the internet that like at a MUFON event last month or something, he finally like confirmed that he thinks that Bigfoot has something to do with some of these cases. Now, I don't have any like clips or anything that I can share. That's just like internet chatter.
Right.
But like, who knows? Maybe the time is coming that it's going to be he's going to make some pronouncement of what he thinks. But I think like probably where he would go is like, well, they don't all have the same explanation.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, oh, here's, because he's already said with some of these water cases, he thinks that it's GHB and that people are disappearing. They're having the date rape drug put in drinks or whatever, for whatever reason. And then that's making them like, you know, like Peter Gibbs, like just lay down and die because they don't have the energy to like go on or whatever. Like, they're not making good decisions. And so they become victims of exposure. But he also points out, and I don't know how true this is, that it's not normal for like coroners to test you for GHB when they do like a toxicology screen. So like, this is not part of normal testing. You have to ask for that specifically. So if you know, these people die and they don't find anything, well, maybe they just didn't test for it. And I think that's a good point. That's a valid point.
And not every coroner, not every medical examiner, not every search team is the same.
Right. That's a real big thing about this.
And I will say this, though. He is doing, even if he is a bit of a, you know, he's making money off this, he's trying to do this paranormal angle, he's still talking about something that is important, which is missing people.
Yeah.
And he brought to light that, there isn't a national registry for missing people.
Yeah. I mean, I think that
in
like
the parks.
I think he's actually, I mean, it's easy to say like, well, he makes money off of this. And so he's got incentive to like, because he can just research some of these cases. He does like pretty factual write-ups in the book without like really having to like say anything about them other than the facts.
Right.
And so like, I think as far as like putting together a book, like it's a lot of work, but it's not like hard necessarily. Right. Like I don't, you know, it's not like he has to like comb a lot of data and like figure out, you know, the trends or whatever. It's just kind of like, this looks like a case, so I'll profile
it. A true crime case where there's like fucking 18 layers of steps to get to the murder. It's just like a story and then someone's gone.
Yeah, I mean, that said, I think that he does a good job of like researching and presenting some of the facts of the cases. But like beyond that, it's like it's kind of kind of good what he's doing, because it really showcases that, like, hey, people are like, this is kind of alarming. Like,
this is weird.
Look at how many people are just gone forever. And, like, you know, the differences in how they're handled, like, why aren't there national standards for search and rescue?
I don't know.
On our national parks. And why would a national park, why would the Park Service not be responsible? Why would they turn it over to law enforcement? And then in some cases, unless it's a crime, law enforcement doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Because they'll say, well, there's no foul play. We find no evidence. There's nothing for us to do. Like, right. We investigate crimes. We don't find missing people.
I feel like it's kind of twofold. Like, one, I feel like, you know, they don't want to bring that to light as like an initiative. Like, hey, we made a national registry of missing people. Also, by the way, thousands and thousands of people are going missing in these national parks. They want people to go to national parks.
Right.
Because it's like a thing that they want people to do. Yeah. And I think not every national park, like we said in the script, has the money of like Yosemite. Yosemite's, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, fucking King Kahuna. There's a lot of little rinky-dink national parks where, like, you know, yeah, it's like the ranger is probably some dude who's just like, I don't know, lived around here my whole life.
Yeah, yeah. There was,
He, like, knows a lot about, like, the wild, the fowls in the game and, like, stuff like that. But, like, someone goes missing, it's kind of like, oh, fuck, well, mountain lion probably got him. Let's close the books here, boys. We got better things to do.
Yeah, like, I read about a national park where there were only, like, two rangers. Because it's like, if it's a small park, or not even a small park, but like a not very often visited.
Small in national park.
Huge in number of acres, but it's like small as far as like attraction.
It's unbelievable
size.
How fucking, we forget sometimes how big this fucking country
it's
is.
It's enormous. I mean, there are millions and millions of acres.
It's unbelievable.
That are public lands.
Yeah.
But I think that you do, you know, you bring up a good point with that. It's like there's different ranger staffing and different levels of competency. And so like that, I mean, it seems reasonable to me to say like, well, we probably should clean that up.
And you think what national park wants to answer that? When they go to the guy Salazar and they try to like kind of, they don't corner him, but they ask him. It's like, you think they want to say like, listen, people are stupid. They go fucking missing. They don't treat Mother Nature, they don't treat wilderness the right way, or something bad happens,
right?
And they get fucked. What do you want me to fucking say?
Yeah, it's like Salazar.
They need
can't,
to put me in charge.
Salazar can't come out and be like, people are inattentive and careless, and they do stupid stuff. And
you can't
say
that.
They do things that they shouldn't do, and we get these lumped in with cases that are genuinely unique,
right?
And it's hard for us to separate them, right. But that's the reality of it.
That is the reality of it.
And you know, I mean,
and people think you want an agency or a business to tell it like it is, like that. But it's like, if people actually heard that, they'd be like fucking pissed and angry hearing that.
Right. Because it would be minimizing the victims. And you can't do that.
And truth hurts.
And you shouldn't do that. But it's true in some cases. Like,
it's true.
People
make
bad decisions.
You talk to anybody who's ever been like a doctor, and it's like, that's why they have such morbid senses of humor. Because it's like, they've had to kill, they've killed, they haven't killed, you know what I'm saying?
Oh.
They've watched, I don't know, hundreds of people die.
Yeah.
It's like, that's why some doctors don't have good bedside manner, because they're callous to it.
Right.
They've seen it happen so many times, it's like, it doesn't affect them anymore.
You know, though, I do want to say, like, compared to the number of visitors every year at our national parks, I think the number of people that go missing without a trace is not that big a percent.
No, the percentage, I mean, it's like, you look at percents and it's different. You got to make the judgment call yourself. Like I said, Mother Nature, she's big, she's beautiful. Big thighs. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like
juicy,
you said,
juicy, juicy booty.
Oh, incredible. And I mean, just absolutely. I mean, you know, you got to watch out, because she's crushing watermelons between those thighs.
Yeah, yeah.
She's doing like strongman exercises. She's pulling cars with her teeth. I mean,
oh God, it's
she's
so
fucking
sexy.
Putting a yoke on her back and carrying it 200 meters. It's unbelievable.
She pulls the ox team.
Just treat her with some. You got to fucking treat her with respect, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
You got to go out there, you got to be prepared.
Yeah.
You got to bring something that isn't a fucking cell phone. Bring a GPS device, satellite device, whatever they're called. I don't know what they're called.
Yeah, Pilates brings this up, that there are like personal tracking beacons that you can buy that, you know, you can activate it. Like, there are devices that you can, you know, even now with your phone, you can ping your location. But these devices are better because they don't run on the same battery.
Right.
So
I talked to my buddy the other day, my buddy who's becoming a pilot. We've referenced him before. He's becoming a pilot and he's getting up. He's adjusting his pants.
I have to adjust a little bit.
And he's adjusting his pants. He's been sitting in that toilet a long time.
And my legs are asleep.
That's true. He was telling me the other day, he's like, doesn't even have his full pilot's license yet, but he can like
partial pilot's license.
I forget what it is.
It's learner's
like,
permit.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if he's like, he's not like a fully, he's got to get a certain number of hours, I think, before he can go like apply to be a pilot places, but he does have a pilot's license, I think, and can fly alone. There's rules and regulations, obviously, but he was saying, he's like, you wouldn't even believe the number of times I have said, I'm not going to go flying because there was a little bit of a drizzle or it didn't feel right to me. The air didn't feel right.
Right.
That's good. Sometimes maybe that's what it kind of is with, you know, the forests and the wilderness. It's like, you might be fucking Bear Grylls. You might be an expert in drinking your own piss.
Yeah.
Maybe some guys in this room right now can fit one or both of those roles. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Maybe one or both of us is an accomplished outdoorsman and one or both of us is skilled at drinking their own piss.
I don't know which.
Yeah.
That's up for you to decide.
That's That's not for us to debate here.
But, you know, don't fuck around because what, you know, one little mistake, you're going to get caught. You break an ankle, you twist an ankle. You're out on a hike. You didn't bring, I don't need that fucking med kit. I'm just going on a routine hike. I'll be fine. Guess what? Twist your ankle. Guess what? Mountain lion.
Yeah.
Fucking well, beats the shit out of you.
And you know, Politus says it, like, go in groups.
Yeah. Or like, weather turns bad, suddenly gets cold as fuck. You're like, oh shit, I didn't bring a shell.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, being prepared and like being thoughtful is like probably 95% of these.
Plus, then you get to go buy all that fun camping gear that you'll never use again.
Yeah.
That's the best part of being an adult is buying useless equipment.
Buying stuff you have to store.
Right. You have to get storage for it. That's fun.
It's so great doing that stuff.
No, but I mean, listen, both of us rarely, if ever, go out into the wilderness.
Or outside at all.
Or outside at all, literally. Literally. Next time I go camping, if I ever go camping, who knows? I'm telling you what, I'm going to be very prepared. Bring a whole bag of shit.
Yeah.
You bring a go bag. You got to just bring everything. Medical equipment, a little fucking axe, a big knife, you know?
Well, you know, it's like
never know what can happen.
John Billman, the like first story he's talking about is a guy who's staying in a national park with friends and they go on a run together.
Right.
The guy brings nothing with him because he's running. So he doesn't even have a phone. Like he's brought nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just his clothes and it's not like he's wearing heavy clothes. So if he trips and falls, like you said, twists an ankle, it can happen easily when you're running. Even when you're just walking, like, you know, he doesn't know where he is. There's nobody around. I mean, you know, I guess you get to that thing of like, well, he was found kind of close to the road and like, why did nothing happen? I mean, it's still mysterious in a way, but it's like, you're starting off at a bad place, probably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you haven't taken lots of precaution, and you probably should. But I think some of these are pretty, I mean, ultimately, they're kind of challenging to describe, to explain.
Here's a quote from a video game I really enjoy. Overconfidence is a slow and insidious killer.
Wow.
It's from Darkest Dungeon.
Darkest Dungeon.
Overconfidence is a slow, insidious killer. You know, never be overconfident. Always be very meek when you're, I think, dealing with Mother Nature. And this is coming from two guys who are very meek in general.
Exceptionally meek.
All right, Andy, I don't know.
We're so meek, we're going to inherit the earth.
That's right. Should we wrap it up here? You got anything else you want to bring up about missing 401? I mean, this is the we didn't even really talk about, I guess we'll get into our verdicts. It's hard to know what the fuck is happening here. I don't know. I can't explain it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
These are puzzles that don't make sense to me.
I would love to say, here's what I think is happening. But I kind of have to take the David Politis approach and say, I think we need more evidence to know for sure. But you're right. We'll probably, I mean, maybe that's a good segue into verdicts.
Yeah. I mean, Bunkfunkers, if you like this kind of stuff, we'd be happy to cover more of these missing 401 cases. Now that we've kind of we've cracked the nut, we've cracked David Politis'
nut. Busted
a
nut here.
We've busted his nut. We've kind of opened it up. The delicious, fatty, fleshy, protein-packed, innard seed of this legume, and we can always Bring in more.
Yeah.
We can just cover more cases. You want us to cover more cases? We'll cover more cases.
I mean, once you start sucking on David Politis' seed, you don't want to stop.
All right, Andy, hit me with your verdict on this one. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess what we're really considering here is like, is there something paranormal at work on this? Like, I'm going to go kind of vague like that because, like, for a lot of these, like, is it ghosts? No, it's probably not ghosts. Fairies.
We covered a wide variety, a wide swath as well. Maybe, you know, if next time you want us to stick to like, hey, here's three that are like, it's Bigfoot, you know? Yeah. So we'll say paranormal in general.
Like, is there something paranormal? I mean, you know, it's such a wide, like, array of things. And I'm a skeptic, right? So I think though, that there's something weird happening. So I'm going to kind of...
I can't explain it.
Yeah. I mean, and that's how I kind of feel about a lot of these is like, there's unexplainable. So there needs to be more evidence. Like, this is a worthwhile thing to, like, continue to investigate.
You hear these ones, you're like, ah, fucking mountain lion killer. But it's like, where's the blood?
Yeah. And I guess my verdict on this is going to be plausible minus and a half.
Wow.
Because.
Wow.
That's
huge.
I'm skeptical of there being a paranormal, but like, I can't say no.
Talking about busting loads.
I can't say no completely.
Yeah.
I mean, but I can't say that I think that either. So I'm kind of in the.
This would make more sense for our alien theory, which is that infrared, unable to be seen aliens,
yeah,
are just abducting people in a blink of an eye. We don't understand. They take them to a new, different existence.
Yeah.
Then putting them back.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously,
too lazy to put them back in the right spot.
Obviously, they've come back looking for remnants of the Third Reich. That's why they're focused on Germans. Because we can all say that the Nazis effectively made contact with extraterrestrials. That's such a, like, there as far as I know, there's like no context for that ever.
Yeah.
It's just it makes German. No sense. Yeah. I just noticed that there were some German surnames. It's like, well, you didn't.
Just a lot of Germans. Didn't mention, a lot of German people.
Didn't mention any other like surnames like Gibbs, like, oh, Scottish. Like, you didn't mention that.
It makes no sense.
A guy, one of the very oldest missing 411 cases is from this guy named, like, I think it's Hans Buchmann, that disappeared from Switzerland in the 1500s and like disappeared from like the forest near his house, wound up in Italy, had no idea how he got there. So obviously, like, Politis makes a note that Hans Buchmann is German. It's like, well, yeah, he fucking lives in Switzerland. Like, like, I think the majority of that country is fucking German people. Like, yeah, what did you, it's like you found one in Germany and you're like, oh, he was German. It's like, well, duh.
Check this out. Now, guys, I know this is a weird story, but get this. The guy was also from Italy. He was Italian.
It's like, oh, this guy from Switzerland was German, spoke German and French. It's like, yeah, it doesn't seem that weird.
Not a weird observation.
Do you know where Switzerland is, David?
He's just kind of like, huh? I don't know.
Just saying. You tell me.
Tell me. Great verdict, Andy. I'm going to go plausible minus minus.
Okay. I was thinking that too. We could have been the same.
Because, you know, we got to look at more. We've only looked at a handful. I can't explain most of them. I know that hypothermia has weird effects on people. Makes you think you're warm when you're not. You know, you start taking off your fucking clothes and stuff. The kids, I don't know what to make of the kids. Whenever there's missing children, it's kind of like, I guess you're right. You're a parent. You know, they can run off. But how do they get that far? They're not. I mean, they're so fragile, but they're so agile. It's just weird. I don't know.
They're fragile. They're agile. Like, my kid, so determined.
True.
It's like, if he wants to do something, he like rarely will just like stop. He'll just keep going.
It's a good thing one of those isn't to murder you.
Yeah, because I would be dead long ago. And the world would be free from my baneful existence. My corruptive influence.
I guess you're right, but I guess I'm specifically the one on that movie I'm referencing.
Right.
The one with the kid Jared at a Darrow or something, I think his name was, they found the clothes and the skull years. It's just like, what the fuck happened to that kid? Like, where the fuck did he go? Like, I understand how he went missing, but it's just like, I don't understand how, like, the clothes and all the skull and the teeth and the shoes. Like, how is his shoes so clean?
Yeah.
Because, like, they say, like, oh, a mountain lion dragged him away. Well, if a mountain lion dragged you away, the clothes would be fucking filthy. Especially the shoes. These are white. He had white tennis shoes. And they were, like, fucking pristine. And I can't explain that. I don't know what happened. Either he kicked him off. But still, I don't know.
Is there an Ed Gein type person taking dead bodies?
Out in the fucking woods, rugged, brawny paper towel, Ed Gein.
Yeah.
There's nothing I love than the great outdoors.
There's nothing I love more than making a shirt out of human nipples.
Making a shirt out of little boys. I love chopping my own wood and being a self-sustaining American. And turning little boys' skin into a lampshade mask.
It doubles as a lampshade and a mask. That's efficiency.
That's efficiency. That's the American way. America's national parks. Full of beautiful birds. Wonderful fishing opportunities. And camping pedophiles. It's like an old school 50s ad for like the national parks. But beware, bears, wolves, and camping pedophiles.
They're allowed to camp here, but they might try to steal your children.
Come to America's national parks. Well, Bonkfunkers, that was our verdicts here on this first chunk of Missing 411. It's hard to really give a full verdict on it all because it's just, there's so many cases.
It's literally unsolved.
They're literally unsolved, and they are fucking head scratchers.
Yeah.
They kind of make you mad. They're such head scratchers. It's like an M.C. Escher painting. So let us know what you think. Email us, MrBunkerPod@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Bunker Pod. Find our YouTube page by YouTube searching Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast. Again, we're trying to get those 100 subscribers so we can get an actual YouTube URL. So feel free to subscribe there if you like the content.
And if you have multiple accounts, subscribe them all.
That's true. Go ahead and do that.
Then we'll get the URL.
Then we can get it. And we can stop saying to just search for us. And if you really enjoy the show, you want to support the show, consider donating on Patreon. You will get a new episode of our Patreon-only show, Andy and Art Debunked.
Patreon.
Every month, and as well as sneak peeks, behind-the-scenes stuff, monthly updates, access to the Discord. We could chat with Andy and I and other Bunkfunkers. So much fun stuff.
So many things.
Boy, Andy.
Woo-wee.
It's a big old enchilada.
This was a full enchilada. I hope your mind tummies are full, Bunkfunkers.
They better be. You better be full and you better be ready to go have a nice sleep and you're out in the wilderness.
Go outside and sleep tonight.
Andy, any last words before I fucking send you, sick my mountain lion on you?
The search can
drag you way into the mountains.
The search continues for these victims. It's sad, but I hope that, you know, this exposure, not from us, but from just in general, helps make things better, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is an important topic.
Nicely said there, Andy. Well, for not the titular Mr. Bunker, but for my Imagineer.
Oh, nice.
Co-host Andy Hart. I'm Art Stone saying that was the whole enchilada.
Do-do-do, do-do-do, do-do-do.
A news story gets shared by a friend on social media, or you catch a tweet that really makes your blood boil. But how do you separate fact from fiction? That's the premise behind Disinformation, a 10-part series from Evergreen Podcasts and Emergent Risk International coming this fall. Tune into Disinformation wherever you get your podcasts, and remember, don't believe everything you read.